It was just that suddenly I felt so far away from everyone, even Teal. She didn't know what it was like having to bite the inside of your lip off for fear the pain in your leg would make you cry, or what it was like to have a woman get up on a public bus so that you could take a seat. I left Teal that afternoon, knowing I'd said all the things I didn't mean to, and none of the things I did. It was 2 months before anyone spoke about religion to me again, and then it wasn't Teal, but another pretty girl. It was mid-morning on a rather blustery day in September 1949. We were sitting on our beds, reading and writing letters after morning exercises, when the nurse came in to announce a visitor. I paid no attention until I heard a low whistle rise to the lips of 20 boys. I glanced up. Standing in the doorway, embarrassed and yet pleased, was a striking blonde. "Not bad," my next bed neighbour peer whispered. "I won't take much of your time," the girl began. "I just want to ask you all to join us at our tent meeting tonight. There will be lots of refreshments."
"What kind?" someone shouted.
"And the bus will leave here at 7 o'clock, and I hope you can all come." The boys burst into wild, exaggerated applause with shouts of, "Encore! Encore!" as the girl retreated. But when 7 o'clock came, every one of us was waiting in the foyer, clean scrubbed, hair stiff with brilliantine. Pierre and I were first in line. We were gay not only because of the night away from the hospital, but also because Pierre had slipped down to the village and come back with our answer to the question of what refreshments would be served. By the time the bus arrived at the tent grounds, the bottle was half empty. We took seats in the extreme rear of the tent and finished the rest of it. Most of the boys thought our antics were funny. The people holding the revival service did not. Finally, a funny-looking man with a thin face and deep-set eyes, the kind of person I disliked on sight, took the podium and announced that there were two people in the congregation who were bound by powers they couldn't control. And then, closing his eyes, he began a long, impassioned prayer for the health of our immortal souls. We choked back our laughter till our throats ached from the effort. But when at last, in a pious sing-song, he called us "our brethren over whom foreign spirits have gained influence," we could hold it in no longer. We howled. We yelped, we whooped with laughter. Seeing that further prayer was impossible, the man told the choir to sing. The song they chose was "Let My People Go." Soon the whole congregation was joining in on the refrain, "Let My People Go." Again and again the words swelled up under the big tent. The meeting ended. The vets trooped out to the waiting bus, but still inside my head the words sang on, "Let them go. Let them go." It is foolish, of course, to suggest that a simple song, a song overheard, not even sung, could become a prayer, and that God would honour it.